Okay, so Om Agana Timananda Shya Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Unmiditam Yena Tasvai Shigurave Namaha. So I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So tonight's topic, of course, is the Mahabharata and the Mahabharata war and those things that happened after the war. In other words, after the Gita was spoken, after the fighting took place, and what happened afterwards, and what happened before. So it's a whole compendium of different events, beginning with the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So what we're talking about here is an interplanetary war, which is very exciting for those of you who like science fiction, but this is not fiction, because on different planets in the universe, there are different beings. Some of those beings are devotees, or godly, let's say, and some of them are what? What do you think? Well, not so nice. Let's use politically correct language today. Challenged individuals. Who just, you know, they have issues with God. Okay, let's be empathic tonight. For some. Hey, forgive me if I do use the word demon in this class, because it may slip out unempathically from my mouth. Basically, there's people who really like God, one of his many, many features, and there's people who just don't like him, ignore him, dedicate their life to trying to dissuade others from worshiping him. And they're the challenged individuals. So these challenged individuals continually have a fight or fight with the individuals who don't have challenges, that is the godly people. And fights take place on the earth planet in different ways. We see, you know, religious wars sometimes. Religious wars, sometimes it's demons versus demons. Oh, sorry for the word. But it's challenged individuals versus challenged individuals. And sometimes we find on other planets that the people who don't accept God, or people who are against God, fight with the people who are for God, or fight with the people. And sometimes we find in the same family of people who are against God, there appears a very nice person who is for God, like Prahlad Maharaj, who was born in the family of the demons. Sorry if I use this word. It's ingrained in me. He was born in the family of not so nice people. Hiranyakashipu was his father, and he was a great guy, a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you have a mixture. It's not only different families or families that indicate one's proclivities as far as worship of God, but it's actually one's mentality. Okay, so getting back to the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, many, many years ago, the demigods, what are demigods? For those of you who don't know, those personalities who are very, very powerful in this universe, and they work for God. Just like the President of the United States has his cabinet, which he's picking right now. Anyway, so we won't talk about that. Sorry about that one, too. So the President of the United States has his cabinet, Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State, etc., like that. So God definitely has a whole bunch of people work under him. There's a hierarchy, a universal hierarchy. And in each and every universe, there is this hierarchy. I hate to see the chart, the organizational chart of God, because it'd be very confusing. In other words, there's God up there, and in every universe it branches off to Lord Brahma. And then Lord Brahma branches off to 33 million demigods. So you got a big organizational chart, and I don't think there's any software that's capable of analyzing this particular organizational chart. It's not a sociocracy. Those of you know what I'm talking about. It's not a democracy. It's hierarchical. Okay. So what happened is once upon a time, the good guys, or the demigods, or those who thought they were good guys, made a mistake. And one of those demigods' name was Indra. Indra was going around on top of his elephant, Airavata, and he came across a sage, and the sage's name was Durvas. The name Durvas means the sage with a bad temper. So you definitely want to be careful of sages with bad tempers. They have, they're sages, but they, sorry, but they have issues also. So what the sage, he thought he would honor this great personality, Indra, and he gave Indra a garland. And Indra thought, I don't need any more garlands. And he put the garland on his elephant. And the elephant threw the garland off, because he just took his trunk and he threw the garland off, and he stomped on the garland. And so when he stomped on the garland, the sage became really upset and cursed Indra. Then the bad guys in the universe, they started to take over because Indra had lost his power. And so Indra got very bewildered, and when Indra gets bewildered, he goes to his immediate boss. You know, that's just the nature of hierarchy, isn't it? You go to your boss or person in charge of the corporation, and which is Lord Brahma. And he and the demigods went to Lord Brahma. They went to Lord Brahma, complained, and Lord Brahma went to his boss, which is Krishna, Lord Vishnu. Krishna expands himself, and he resides on the shore of a particular ocean. It's quite interesting, ocean of milk. Don't worry, the milk does not get bad. Doesn't have to be refrigerated. It's a different type of milk that we're experiencing on the Earth planet. Anyway, so they went and they complained to Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu said, because you've been offensive to this sage, there's only one thing we can do. You have to make a deal with these challenged individuals. And the deal should be churn the ocean of milk. And when you churn it, then you'll get some nectar out of it that'll make you really strong and almost immortal. The word for immortality is called Amrit. Amrit means the nectar of immortality. Nectar, basically. So one thing led to another. I'm not going to tell the whole story, the journey of the ocean. They started making a deal with the demons, and they used the snake as the rope and Mount Mandara as the churning rod, and Lord Vishnu helped by sitting at the top to make sure the whole thing didn't fall over. And they churned. Many things came out. Poison came out. Lord Shiva just saved the whole universe from being poisoned. And eventually the nectar came out, and what happened is the challenged individuals. I'll just use demons. It's a lot easier. Sorry about that. You know, then I have to pause every time I think of what to say. So the demons, but forgive me. The demons actually, the asuras, you know, that's actually better. Asura, that's a negative. Sura means godly, asura means ungodly. So the demons, let me just use that word, by your permission. The demons actually stole the nectar. Then the demigods, they had to go again to Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu said, I got to take you out of, get you out of trouble again this time. And so Lord Vishnu took a female form, and that's the Mohini Murti form. And he tricked the demons, gave the nectar to the demigods. One of the demons actually snuck in. His name was Rahu. And the demigods became very powerful. But the demons got angry at this whole trick. And basically, they started to defeat the demigods, despite the demigods having drunk the amrit or the nectar. And so the demigods again went to Lord Vishnu. It's a little complicated. And he took out his weapon, Sudarshan Chakra and everything like that, and started killing many of the demons. One of the demons' names was Kalanemi, who later on became Jasanda in Krishna's pastimes. And Kalanemi became Kamsa, sorry, Kamsa in Krishna's pastimes. And so many of the demons were killed, and all the demons were threatened to be wiped out. And so what happened is Narada Muni got upset. There's not going to be any demons around. Because you need them. Why do you need demons? Can anyone think of why you need demons? Why? The child garbage, yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's good. See, he's better at the story than I am. So because Krishna, to make a long story short, Krishna likes to fight sometimes, so he has his devotees come down, arranges different things so he can have some interaction with people who are acting demoniacally. Very good. And also, we need demons. We need demons because, of course, we got demons inside. We don't need any more. But too many of them. So we need them because it keeps us on our toes. Because without opposition, Prabhupada actually said that. One devotee asked Prabhupada, why is there so much opposition? Not only demon oppositions, but just all sorts of problems. And Prabhupada said, without opposition, where's the chance for glorious victory? So it makes you strong. It makes you strong, like a weightlifter. He has to increase the weight of his weights he's lifting, the pounds of the weights he's lifting, so that he gets bigger and bigger muscles. So in the same way, we need some opposition to keep us on our toes, and the demigods need the opposition. So Lord Vishnu was told, and Lord Brahma told Narada Muni, stop the fighting because we don't want to kill all the demons. Okay, so they stopped the fighting, and a lot of demons were killed. Bali Maharaj, who was a great demon, was knocked unconscious. And so Bali Maharaj's spiritual master, Shukracharya, brought Bali Maharaj back to life. And then Bali became very, very powerful because he was devoted to his guru. So even if your guru happens to be a demon, if you're devoted to him, you become powerful. So that's a message for all of you. So not that you should look for a demon guru. Generally, if you want to be Krishna conscious and you have a guru who's a demon, I would suggest you change at that particular juncture. So Bali Maharaj, but Shukracharya, he wasn't all bad. He said worship Vishnu, but worship Vishnu for material things. And if Vishnu wants everything, say no. That's a good way to deal with God, isn't it? My dear God, give me a house by the sea, Om Jai Jagadisha Ri. And God comes and says, I would like you to do this for me, my dear devotee. And you say, no, God. Please give me a house by the sea, and I'll do whatever you want. That is called baniya, right? Business. So Bali Maharaj and Shukracharya, they were doing business with God for a while. And then the demigods, they lost their position again. Bali Maharaj took over the heavenly planets. Then what happened is who appeared? Anyone know? Lord Vamanadeva took back the heavenly planets by tricking Bali Maharaj, 3 steps of land. Bali Maharaj, of course, became a great devotee at that point, gave up whatever tendencies he had that weren't appropriate. And he resided in Sukala. Later on, he became Indra. So that's another story. So the demons were defeated. So after the demons were defeated, they thought, where are we going to go? What world are we going to go to? Because this is an interplanetary battle we're talking about. Where can we hide out where we're safe? And they saw in the corner of the universe this nice little planet called Earth. They said, let's take our spaceships there. No, they didn't have to use spaceships. So they, let's go to the Earth. So they landed on the Earth planet, and they took shelter in the Earth. And they took shelter in Kshatriya families. Everybody knows Kshatriya means those who are, let's say, soldiers, administrators, government leaders. This is over 5,000 years ago. Don't worry. Not today. The government leaders are very pious. So, and godly. Are they? I don't know. So anyway, 5,000 years ago, well over 5,000 years ago, they took birth in all these Kshatriya families, leaders, kings, ministers, everything like that. And there was a problem in the Earth planet. So when there's a problem, as we mentioned before, people go to God. I mean, what else can you do when there's a problem? He's the, what do they say, HR department of the universe. So they get together, get their ombudsman, Lord Brahma. Interesting corporate explanation. So they go to Lord Brahma, Bhumi especially, who is the personification of the Earth planet. The Earth is actually a living entity. Isn't it? There's that Gaia hypothesis. And right now, we're all attacking the Earth, and not all of us, but many of us are attacking the Earth, or through modern technology, the Earth is being attacked in many ways. So in any case, Bhumi goes to Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma goes to Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu says, I'm going to take care of this. We're going to find out or figure out a way to wipe out all these demoniac kings on the Earth planet. And so you should all go down, referring to the demigods, and take birth on the Earth planet so we can do this. And so this is the beginning, setting in the stage for the whole Mahabharata. So here's the Mahabharata is actually quite a lengthy treatise. It's actually the longest epic in the world. There are over 100,000 two-line stanzas, and it's longer, much longer, eight times longer than the Iliad and Odyssey put together. An epic poem. And there's 18 parvas. Sometimes people say that those 18 parvas refer to the days of the Mahabharata war. Of course, each parva doesn't deal with one day of the Mahabharata war. It deals with something different. But we're going to go over each and every one of the parvas to get a summary of the Mahabharata. This, for me, it's quite interesting to understand what each parva contains. And we're not going to tell the whole story because we'd be here forever telling the whole story of the Mahabharata. Many of you have read abridged versions of the Mahabharata. Many of you have seen different film versions of the Mahabharata. And it's quite a lengthy story. The recent film version of the Mahabharata is something like 265 episodes, each one a half an hour. So it's pretty long. So when did the Mahabharata, when did the story or the Mahabharata war take place? We're just talking about the Mahabharata war right now. It's about 3129 AD. How do we know this? I wasn't there. The way we know this is that within the body of the Mahabharata are descriptions of astronomical phenomena. In other words, eclipses, where the stars were, and all sorts of details by which scientists can utilize their computers to sort of backtrack the skies so they can understand what particular date the Mahabharata war was fought at. B.C., yeah. Oh, sorry, B.C. I made a mistake when I wrote it. I wrote this down really quickly. But it's B.C., obviously. It's not A.D. because we'd be in trouble. You know, I hope the next big war is that far in the future. That's my hope. I'm crossing my fingers. But, you know, I'm not sure that that's going to be like that. Especially the way that things are going nowadays, right? So anyway, so it's B.C., which means B.C.E., before the Christian era. And that's how we know the date. Now, some people, some linguists, they analyze the Sanskrit and they say, well, it was more recent or something like that. Well, the Mahabharata is an epic poem. It's considered to be an itihasa, history. So it's passed down through verbal exchange. So naturally, if the Mahabharata is being passed down, it's going to be written. Whoever wrote it down, which is Vyasadeva, or Vyasadeva didn't write it, but Ganesha actually wrote it. When it was written down, at that particular juncture, that's the type of Sanskrit that was written down in. So it was like a oral tradition for some time, but passed down exactly from spiritual master to disciple. That's called the disciplic succession. In disciplic succession, there's no variance. It's not like the telephone game that we all played when we were young, that one person would say one thing, another person would say another thing, and eventually the whole thing would be something different. But anyway, so this is how we know the exact date, because of the phenomena. And also the astrologers, they tell us when the planets were in this particular configuration over 5,000 years ago, then that indicated a great war of destruction. So there's astrologically, astronomically, these things can be understood. So we're going to start with the first part of the Mahabharata, which has many aspects. It's not the most lengthy parva in the Mahabharata. The most lengthy is actually the Shanti parva, which we'll get to. The Shanti parva is later on, it involves grandfather Bhishma. So, to make a long story short, so there's a lot of things you see here, you don't have to read all of them, that we have this great king, Mahabish, who became Shantanu because he committed a mistake. He looked at Ganga the wrong way in the heavenly planets, and then he marries Ganga when he comes down to the earth planet, and Ganga has a deal that, she requests her husband, or tells her husband he can't talk back to her, or else she's going to leave. And what she does is she starts killing all of her children, one after the other, drowning them in the Ganges, and Bhishma is born as the eighth son. And then Bhishma, as the obedient son, and now we're just summarizing the whole thing. Don't worry, we're leaving a lot out here. So Bhishma, as the eighth son of Shantanu, is a very obedient son, and so he arranges another marriage for his father with Satyavati. And the deal in that marriage is that the son of Satyavati and his father, Shantanu, has to become the next king. So in order to arrange that, Bhishma takes a vow of never getting married and takes a vow of never taking over the kingdom and being always loyal and obedient to the king. So then what happens is marriage from between Satyavati and Shantanu, out comes two children, Chitrangada and also Vichitravirya. So Vichitravirya and Chitrangada, they're very, very nice kids, but Chitrangada gets killed because he fights with the Gandharva, Chitrangada. He gets killed because he fights with a Gandharva by the same name that he dies. And so then Vichitravirya wants a wife, so Grandfather Bhishma, this is the whole outline here, Grandfather Bhishma goes out and finds him a wife in the kingdom of Kashi. He finds three wives, Amba, Ambalika, and Ambika. But Amba's not too happy with that. And because he kidnapped her, she can't get married to anyone else, even though she wanted to marry Shalva. And so she vows ultimately, after long intrigue, to be the cause of the death of Bhishma. Okay. And then Dhritarashtra out. So what happens is Vichitravirya dies. He becomes so enamored with his two beautiful wives, I guess he just didn't take care of himself. And he dies. He's very weak by constitution. So then we have Dhritarashtra, Pandu, and Vidura born from the wives of Vichitravirya by Srila Vyasadeva. So this is the process that was there in the previous yuga, that the brother of a particular man who couldn't have children could have children with his brother's wife or wife. So, and Vidura, of course, is an incarnation of Yamaraj. And Yamaraj is there because he wants to preach Krishna consciousness. Yamaraj is the judge of the dead people, or the judge of all of us. And so then, moving ahead quickly, Dhritarashtra marries Gandhari from Afghanistan. At that time, it was quite peaceful there. Pandu marries Kunti, and then Pandu marries another wife named Madri. And while he's on vacation with his wives, he has a hunting accident, and he happens to kill a sage, actually a sage and his wife, Kindamana's wife. And as a result, he gets cursed. He can't have an intimate relationship with his wife to have children. However, Kunti, his wife, has actually a very nice arrangement, whereas she can call any demigod to have give her a child. Now, previously, she's called the sun god and had Karna, but she didn't tell anybody, and so Karna's been adopted by another couple, Adirath and Radha. It's a lot of the details here. So then, after that, Kunti calls first Yamaraj, or Dhamaraj, and has Yudhisthira as a son. And at the same time, Gandhari, this is all the Adiparva, a lot of stuff in the Adiparva. I say more details of the story of the Adiparva than anywhere else. So Gandhari, she is pregnant, but she doesn't give birth. And then finally, she gives birth to a lump of flesh. That lump of flesh is divided into 101 pieces because she wanted a daughter. And Vyasadeva puts them in little incubators, which is described as little pots. And later on, those children are born, and these are the Kurus, or, Kurus or Kauravas. The enemy, thank you. The enemies of the Pandavas. These Kauravas are not precisely demons. Let me explain something. This is all Krishna's arrangement. Duryodhana and Shakuni, he's not one of the kids, obviously he's Uncle Shakuni. So they are actually demigods that were sent down to actually stir up the conflict so that all the demoniac entities there, the kings, could be killed. They are actually Kali and Dwarpa. It was very interesting. This is what the Mahabharata described. The full edition of the Mahabharata describes. So they're not really demons. They act demonically, but they're part of the Lord's pastimes to enable this whole battle to take place, to stir up everything. Okay. So Yudhisthira is born, and then Yudhisthira is born from Dharmaraj and Kunti. And then after that, you have Bhima, who is born the same time as Duryodhana, pops out of his pot. And so they're actually the equal age. Bhima is born from Vayu, and he's very strong. And then you have from Indra and Kunti, Arjuna is born, the best, most heroic person, and the eternal friend of Krishna. Arjuna appears whenever Krishna appears in different ways. When you have the Narayan Rishis, he appeared as Nara and Krishna appeared as Narayan. So he's an eternal friend. Krishna indicates this in the Gita, where he says that many, many births you and I have passed, and then you were there previously when I spoke the Gita. You don't remember it, because it's a previous birth, you change your body, and I do not change my body, Krishna says, because Krishna has a spiritual body, which never changes. So after some time, Pandu, who's very happy he has these five kids now, just completely in ecstasy. You know, five kids, instant birth, you know, no pregnancy, no long pregnancy. Fantastic. I mean, there was one mistake they made that Kunti made with Bhima. She dropped him on the ground right after he was born, and because she heard a lion's roar. But because he was Bhima, born of Vayu, he just broke all the rocks that he fell on. So it's good to have a kid like that. You never have to worry about him. Don't worry about dropping your kid. You know, worry about who you drop your kid on. Yeah. So anyway. Moving ahead, so Pandu, in spite of being so joyful, he gets a little romantic with Madri one day. You know, anyway, Madri's not dressed so chastely, and they're out picking flowers or something. He goes, "You are beautiful," and he goes to embrace her, and boom, he dies. And so then the Pandavas are left without the father, and then they have to go back to Hastinapur. All right, so they go to Hastinapur, and as soon as they arrive in Hastinapur, the Kurus, or Kauravas, as you say, they're very upset, because here is Yudhisthira, who is older than Duryodhana. There's this law or rule of primogeniture. That's a fancy name for those of you who don't know what it means. It means the firstborn, or the oldest, if he's qualified, becomes the king. And that's the way it was in Europe for many, many years. And even in Europe, you had many times brothers, they would kill each other, so the one would become the king. That's all right. He's young, he can do anything. But so this sort of fratricidal war is not unheard of, even in the Western world. And actually, even terrible tyrant, Aurangzeb, you know, he did something. He imprisoned his father. He killed his brother. So it's a common thing when you want to be king or have a position, then you have to at least denigrate the other person. We see this in politics in America, don't we? So anyway, so what happened is that the Kurus were really upset. The 100 kids, especially Duryodhana and Dushasana, they were really upset that here's Yudhisthira, and he's supposed to become the next king because he's really qualified and he's the oldest. And so they made some attempts on the Pandavas' lives, and one of the attempts was feeding Bhima poison, trying to drown him. But because he was, you know, really powerful and he was taken care of by the Nagas under the earth, under the sea, he became more powerful. They gave him this Rasa Kundala, which is actually a drink that makes you really powerful, more powerful than 10,000 elephants. So he became so strong. Every time they tried to kill him, they had so many different ways of trying to kill him. They sent him to Barnabad, told him he was going to go on vacation, try to burn him down, and they escaped through a tunnel. And eventually, before they had this whole attempt at killing them and by burning them down, they were called to give their guru, Dronacharya, his guru dakshin, which meant Dronacharya had an issue with his friend Drupada. So Drupada had not properly respected Dronacharya, so Dronacharya had his disciples, first the Kurus, and then the Pandavas, tried to capture Drupada, and the Pandavas were successful. And Drupada got so upset at this that basically he decided to have a child who could kill Dronacharya. And so he had to do a fire sacrifice. And the whole story about the fire sacrifice, why Dronacharya's wife didn't have the child instead of whatever, because she was putting on her makeup when it came time to have the child. It's a little bit of a funny story in the Mahabharata, that the priest said, all right, to Dronacharya, call your wife. It's time for her to come and drink the sacred potion so that she can have a child. And they sent a messenger to the wife and said, no, I'm putting on my makeup, make myself more beautiful. And the priest got so upset, they said, we're going to have the child without her. And they threw the potion, did whatever mantra they were going to do, and Dhrishtadyumna came out of the fire. And then later on, Draupadi came out of the fire. So these are different characters. And then, therefore, Drupada had these two personalities, and it's described that Draupadi was going to be the cause of defeat of millions of Kshatriyas, and Dhrishtadyumna was going to be able to kill Dronacharya. Okay, at the same time, Karna appears again. Remember, Karna is the son of Kunti, before she got married by the sun god. And he appears and he challenges the Pandavas. They didn't actually have a fight, but he challenged them. And Duryodhana appreciated that so much that in spite of Karna being ostensibly in a Shudra family, in a Charitya family, he gives Karna a kingdom. And he says, you can now be the king of Anga. And therefore, you're qualified to be a Kshatriya, to fight alongside me. Because he knew that Karna, being the best bowman possible, was the only one capable, possibly capable, of defeating Arjuna. We're still in the Adiparva. We're almost finished with the Adiparva. But the Adiparva has all this basic information before, basically most of the stuff before the battle occurred, etc. So we talked about the house of Lak, attempt to burn the Pandavas in the house of Lak. Then after the house of Lak was burnt, the Pandavas escaped through a tunnel. They decide not to go back to the kingdom. Let's go in exile, in incognito, so no one will see, so we can actually figure out what Duryodhana is going to do. So in the meantime, they go into this forest, and Bhima finds this cute little demon. Hidimba kills her brother. And he gets married to her, and he has a very nice... Rakshasa. That's a different thing. There's some nice Rakshasas. Rakshasas generally eat people for prasadam. Like our friend Robin. You know, he offers to whatever demigoddess or what goddess he's going to offer people to. So you think, well, eating people is really bad. Is it? Do you eat people? But people eat chickens too. Would you eat chicken? Good. So, just like when they sit and eat chicken. Someone, I was at a program the other night, one little boy asked me, a little girl, she said, have you ever eaten chicken? It's just like, it's cannibalism, you know. Here's a leg. Ha. Here's a wing. Ha. Here's the liver. Ha. So basically, there's very little difference. So apart from that, so Bhima has a nice son, Ghatotkacha, and he's a Rakshasa, and he's going to help later on in the battle, etc. And Bhima does other things while they're in hiding. He kills another demon known as Bakasura, because he ate all of Bakasura's prasadam. And then eventually Arjuna wins Draupadi at the Swayamvara. Draupadi, as we mentioned before, was the daughter of Drupada, and she was supposed to be the cause of destroying all the Kshatriyas and most of the Kshatriyas. And then the Pandavas come back, and it's decided that the Pandavas and the Kurus can no longer live with each other, therefore they should have separate kingdoms. They're given this kingdom of Indraprastha, which is basically a desert. And while they're there, they burn the forest there, under the instruction of Agni, who has indigestion, so he wants to eat all the herbs in the forest. And they get blessed by Agni and turn Indraprastha into heaven, basically. And Maya Danava helps them build this beautiful palace there, which the Kurus are very envious of. And while they're there enjoying life, Arjuna has to leave for some time because he intrudes on Yudhisthira and Draupadi. That was their deal. And he goes into exile. I think it was about 12 years he went into exile. And while he's in exile, he marries several girls. Nice exile. So he marries his Ulupi and Chitrangada, and he has children with them who later helped in the battle of Kurukshetra against the Kurus. And then finally, at the end of exile, he stops by and kidnaps Subhadra from Dwarka, and much to the chagrin of Balaram. But Krishna pacifies Balaram. And then the Pandavas decide to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. We'll get into the end of the Adiparva right now. And the Adiparva, this is the most lengthy thing. The rest of it goes rather quickly. And so in order to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, you have to kill everybody who's opposed to your rule. Because the only person who could perform the Rajasuya sacrifice is an emperor. That is someone who is the king of kings. The king over all the other kings. And the only person who would oppose the Pandavas at that time is Jarasandha. So they send Krishna and Arjuna and Bhimsen, and they take care of Jarasandha by bifurcating him. That's another story. And that's the end of the Adiparva. The rest of the parva is real short, as I said before. So the Sabdaparva, that means the ceremony. It actually means ceremony or assembly. That's what the word Sabda means. So then you have the Rajasuya sacrifice. And the Rajasuya sacrifice, there's a lot of problems because the Shishupala, who was the enemy of Krishna, the cousin of Krishna, insults Krishna 100 times. Krishna previously promised not to kill him unless he committed 100 offenses. So Krishna chops off his head. Duryodhana becomes insulted right after the Rajasuya sacrifice because the palace the Pandavas were living in was constructed in such a way that water looked like land, land looked like water, and the doorway looked like it's an opening. So basically Duryodhana smashed his head in the doorway, fell into the water, and Draupadi, she laughed at Duryodhana. Now, you really don't want to do that, you ladies. Laugh at a man when he makes a mistake. There's several things that women don't. That's one of the things women should not do. One of the things men should not do is overestimate a woman's age. So you got to be careful with different things when you're dealing with that woman. So anyway, Duryodhana gets really insulted. I hate even more so. I hate the Pandavas. And basically, he decides, along with his good old Uncle Shakuni, Mama Shri, he decides, let's somehow or other get rid of the Pandavas. So there was this gambling match, because a Kshatriya had to respond to a challenge, either to gamble or to fight. I don't remember, I don't know if you remember when you were young, some of you were young men, that if you were challenged to a fight and you didn't fight, you were called a wimp or something like that. Anyone remember that? Or sissy? Or wimp? Or some derogatory term, right? You didn't have that in school? In India, you don't fight in India. So, but anyway, that's how young boys are sometimes. And so Kshatriyas are something, they have this passion. They're almost like young boys. That and Brahman, if a Brahman is challenged to fight, what will a Brahman do? What does anyone know? Yeah, you say, you won. You won. He doesn't care. He doesn't care about prestige. But a Kshatriya, prestige is everything. Real important. Like Krishna says to Arjuna, what? For one who is honored, what? Dishonor is worse than death. Wow. Can you imagine that? I wouldn't think like that. When I was young and taking gym in school, that we had our wrestling, and I would tell the opponent, you have to do it, it was part of the school. I tell the opponent that, look, when they say 1, 2, 3, I'm going to throw myself on my back, and you win. And I failed gym. Okay, the only subject I ever failed. So anyway, so Kshatriyas, they have to respond to a challenge. So basically Yudhisthira was challenged as gambling match. But he went a little bit too far, because each time the bet, the ante was upped, was increased. Ante means what you're betting. Then he also increased his ante or his bet, and he started giving away all his jewels, his kingdom, his horses, and finally, we know he gave away his brothers. And that's real gambling fever. One may think that this would never happen, but if you've ever visited Las Vegas, I used to preach, I travel through Las Vegas, sometimes through the airport. You see people who sit for days and days and days at the one-armed bandits. Those machines, the slot machines are called one-armed bandits. A bandit is someone who's sitting, Dakoy, Gunda, one-armed Gunda. So it's someone who steals from you, but still they just, I'm going to win, I'm going to win. And the odds are always for the house, right? So anyway. And they lose everything. Some people lose. They have a notary public outside of the gambling casinos, so people can sign their cars over. It's true. We're not just making that up. The people sign their cars over, and then they have to go home on a Greyhound bus. So this gambling fever—it's not just a joke. And many governments are supported by the lottery and things like that. People think they're going to win. You hear about one person winning. So, therefore, you have Yudhisthira, who just became enamored with this gambling. He went too far and he gambled everything. Eventually, he gambles his wife. And they attempt to disrobe Draupadi. They drag her into the assembly. And that was too much. And then we know Krishna saved her by providing what? Unlimited what? sari, or gopi skirt, unlimited cloth. He provided, he saved her. And then we have Dhritarashtra, the father of Duryodhana, feeling a little repentant. He says, okay, let's forgive them. They can have back their kingdom. So it seems like everything is all right. But then they challenge him to a second gambling match. And this gambling match is, you know, winner takes all. I mean, just one time you roll the dice. And the loser, he loses everything, has to go in exile for 13 years. And the final year is incognito, agyatvas, incognito. And so the Pandavas lose, obviously, because the dice is loaded. You know what loaded dice is? No, I'll explain. You know what dice are? You know the little things you have, like little dots on them? Yeah, that's a dice. So a loaded dice means it has a weight. It's weighted not equally on all sides. So when you're a real expert, you can throw it and you know which side it's going to land on. That's called a loaded dice. It's very common. I mean, the gamblers in the U.S. used to use this too. I mean, Shakuni was not the first one or the only one to do it. It's been done throughout history. So anyway, so they lose everything. And while they're getting ready to go on exile, Bhima is so angry because Duryodhana, he wants to put Draupadi on his lap. And Bhima says, I'm going to break his lap, break his thighs. And I'm going to kill every single last one of those Pandavas. Of Kurus, sorry. Every single last one of those Kurus I'm going to kill. And so later on it's decided that when they fight in the Battle of Kurukshetra that none of the other Pandavas have the right to kill the Kurus. Only Bhima has the right. So even when the other Pandavas are about ready or they've captured one of the Kurus, they don't do it because they're saving them for Bhima. So anyway, so they go into exile with the last year being incognito exile. That's called the Sabdaparva. Next one is Vana, which means forest. And in this Vanaparva, we have the Shikhandi story, which I'm not going to tell, but Shikhandi is actually Amba, who was vowed to be able to kill grandfather, and has the benediction from Lord Shiva to be able to kill grandfather Bhishma. So in the Vanaparva, they're... the Pandavas are tested. We're not going too long yet. Are tested by Durvasa Muni, who's been sent by Duryodhana. And Durvasa Muni, again, remember he has bad temper. I mentioned before at the beginning of the class. And he wants to eat along with his 10,000 disciples. And so Draupadi has this cooking pot that provides unlimited food until she has eaten herself. And so she has just eaten. So there's a problem. Krishna comes and saves the day by taking one little grain of rice. And when Krishna is satisfied, everyone's satisfied. When you water the root of the tree, guess what? The whole tree gets watered. So Durvasa Muni and his disciples just walk away with bloated bellies, burping at the same time, because they're completely full and they're embarrassed to even ask for food because they don't want to commit an offense of not eating. So then Arjuna does some austerities, gets weapons, you know, fights with Lord Shiva a certain time, goes to heaven, learns how to dance, which will come in handy. And Arjuna gets cursed by Urvasi, the heavenly damsel. Basically, that curse amounts to a one-year curse. It was mitigated by Lord Brahma, Lord Indra. So that Arjuna would just be a eunuch for 1 year when he went into a Yadvas. What? He could pick any year. Okay. So he picked that year. It's good. Oh, he knows a lot. So anyway, so then Bhima gets blessed by Hanuman after he can't even pick up Hanuman's tail. And there's another story. This is a side story that during this whole time when the Pandavas are in exile, Duryodhana decides to tease the Pandavas by going with his whole entourage, his wives and everything, and just show their opulence in front of the Pandavas. Instead, Duryodhana gets captured by the Gandharvas. And Arjuna has to save him, because one of the Gandharvas, Chitaratha, is his friend. So he saves him, and Duryodhana gets so upset he decides to commit suicide, but his friends, the demons, They assure him, they take him out of his body, give him a pep talk, and assure him that we're going to actually be able to take over the consciousness of Grandfather Bhishma and Dronacharya and all these other personalities who normally would not be on the side of the Kurus. And the reason they can take over their consciousness is because all these personalities, Grandfather Bhishma and Dronacharya and Kripacharya, were eating impure food. It was from Duryodhana's kitchen. You've got to be careful what you eat. Because if you eat impure food, Prabhupada said, your consciousness becomes polluted or affected. That's why we're very careful about who's cooking, what food we're eating, making sure it's prasadam like that. So Duryodhana gets very happy. And right before the Pandavas go into their one-year of hiding, because if they're found out during that 1 year of hiding, then the whole 13 years takes place again, 13 years of exile takes place again. Right before that, they send this Jayadrath, who is Duryodhana's brother-in-law. He's married to Dushala, who's Duryodhana's sister, to kidnap Draupadi. And so instead of being able to kidnap Draupadi, he gets captured by the Pandavas, and they give him five little sikas on his head, one for each of the Pandavas. And he takes a vow, basically, to serve Lord Shiva and to get the benediction of Lord Shiva, and he gets the benediction later on in the battle of being able to defeat all the Pandavas except for one in one day. So, then we get on to the Virat part. It gets quicker as we go through the part. It's the whole Mahabharata part. So that means the Pandavas are in exile in the kingdom of Bharat. Then you have Yudhisthira becoming Kanka, who is the advisor to the king, prime minister to the king, Balava, that's Bhimsen. He becomes a cook because he likes food a lot. His name is Rikudara. He has a wolf belly. That means he can eat everything and anything. And Brihanela, that's Arjuna, who becomes a nice little eunuch. And he becomes the dancing teacher. Rishnami and Grantika, they're taking care of the horses and the cows, the Ashwini Kumara's sons, and Draupadi becomes Surindri, which means she's a hairdresser for the queen at that point. So they try to spend their whole year, and they're pretty successful at spending the whole year there in exile. At the end of the year, the Kurus and Shakuni figure out that the Pandavas are there because someone was killed, but anyway, I'm not going to get into that. So the Kurus attack the kingdom of Virat on the last day, and at the end of the last day, when the day has finally ended, Arjuna defeats the Kurus, the whole Kuru army at this particular point. And then Arjuna's son Abhimanyu is married to Uttara, who is Virat's daughter. So that's the end of this parva. Quick. And then there's the Udyoga parva. And this is before the battle of Kurukshetra. Vidura tries to give some advice to the Kurus. He gets insulted by Duryodhana, then he goes on pilgrimage. The movie is not accurate because the movie depicts Vidura there the whole time of the battle of Kurukshetra, but Vidura is on pilgrimage. You see, he gets so disgusted with his brother, half-brother, that he just can't continue there. Sanjaya's first sent as a peace envoy between both sides. Krishna comes as a peace envoy. Krishna is attacked by Duryodhana. And Duryodhana sees the universal form of Krishna, becomes defeated by Krishna. Still, he's still determined to fight against the Pandavas. And then Krishna and Kunti, they have another plan to convince Karna to take their side by informing Karna that he's actually the son of Kunti. Karna, though, is so determined to remain as Duryodhana's friend because he made that vow. But he tells Kunti that at the end of this battle, there'll be five Pandavas alive. You know, either I'll kill one of the Pandavas, just one, I won't kill the other ones, or they'll kill me. And then Sanjaya is given spiritual vision so he can see the battle of Kurukshetra. Dhritarashtra doesn't want to have that vision. He's offered the vision first. And he says, I don't want to see my sons die. So that's the end of that parva. And then there's the Bhishma parva, where Bhishma is appointed as the commander-in-chief. Then the Bhagavad Gita is spoken, which we'll be speaking about next week. And the Pandavas, in order to, after the Bhagavad Gita is spoken, the Pandavas want to get permission from Bhishma to fight with him because he's the grandfather. Obviously, if you want to kill your grandfather, you ask for permission first. So they go to Grandfather Bhishma, ask for permission, and they get permission. And then what happens is that eventually Arjuna, after long, many, many days, defeats Grandfather Bhishma using Shikhandi, who was previously Amba in his previous life, because Bhishma had taken a vow never to fight, to shoot arrows at a woman or anyone who previously was a woman. There's a whole story about Shikhandi, because Shikhandi was born as a woman, later became transformed into a man. But that's a long story, which would take probably a half hour to tell. And so then at the end of this parva, Bhishma is lying on a bed of arrows. He's defeated. Then the Drona parva, Drona becomes a commander. And Drona is defeated by Krishna's trick, because Krishna tells Yudhisthira to say that Drona's son, Ashwatthama, is dead. And Yudhisthira, of course, refuses to go along with Krishna's wish. So Bhimsen kills the elephant known as Ashwatthama, and then Yudhisthira is able to say, Ashwatthama, the elephant, is dead. So in other words, he's still lying. Because even if you give someone a false impression, deliberately you're lying, even if you're telling the truth. So he lies, and he doesn't follow Krishna's order. So two wrongs. And because of that, his chariot at that point always has to touch the earth. Previously, his chariot never touched the earth. So this is a big mistake he made by not following Krishna's direction. So then Dronacharya, upon hearing that his son Drisadunya is dead, what does he do? He goes into trance. His son Ashwatthama is dead, I'm sorry. He goes into trance and Drisadunya chops his head off. So that's the Drona Parva, Karna Parva. Karna was next appointed as a general. Karna was not allowed to fight before that. Grandfather Bhishma didn't really like Karna that much. So Karna was appointed as the general, and Karna is killed by Arjuna when he's trying to fix his chariot wheel that's stuck in the dirt. And Arjuna fights him, even though Karna doesn't have his weapon, because Krishna tells him to do so. So Krishna's interceding there, even though it's against Kshatriya Dharma. Still, because Karna had committed so many heinous activities, including calling Draupadi a prostitute, still, he was like a criminal. And if someone's a criminal, you don't have to follow the Kshatriya rules. So Karna's killed by Arjuna, and right after that, Dushyanta, the brother of Duryodhana, was killed by Bhima in such a horrendous way. He ripped open his chest and appeared to drink the blood. Actually, the acharyas describe that he just made believe he was drinking the blood. He didn't really drink the blood. And Draupadi had taken a vow never to tie her hair until she could smear it with the blood of Dushyanta. So Bhimsen came back with this blood, and Draupadi put it on her hair. So that's the Karna Parva, getting towards the end. The Shalya Parva, and of course that's the uncle of the Pandavas, And Shalya was then appointed as a commander. And this is the last day of the battle, and Shalya, of course, was killed. And finally, Bhima fights with Duryodhana and breaks Duryodhana's thighs under the instruction of Krishna, and breaks the rules for a fight with clubs. Krishna keeps showing him, you know, hit below the belt, hit below the belt. Balaram becomes very angry, but Krishna protects Bhimsen. So this is not the end. Then we have the Shoptika Parva. And at this point, Ashwatthama, who's still alive, remember Ashwatthama didn't really die, the son of Drona, Kripa, Charya, and Kritavarma, they go into the Pandava army camp in the middle of the night. Without the Pandavas, are not there. The Pandavas are somewhere else. And they kill practically everybody in the camp, including Drisadunya, the five sleeping sons of the Pandavas. You know, horrendous slaughter. So practically no one's alive, just like three people on their side, seven people on the other side of the battle of Kurukshetra are alive. Practically no one is alive from the whole. And this is Krishna's plan, because to wipe out everybody who was a burden on the earth. Then you have the Stri Parva. Stri Parva, Stri refers to women, where the women are crying. Obviously, they lost their husbands. And in the Stri Parva, Gandhari curses Krishna. She curses Krishna that his family will self-destruct within 30 some odd years from then. And she also causes Yudhisthira's toes to curl up and become ugly, because she looks below her blindfold. And Yudhisthira, it's described, had such beautiful toes, and the toes is like that. So she was really angry, and of course we have Dhritarashtra, who thought he was going to kill Bhimsen by giving him a bear hug, but instead he smashed the statue of Bhimsen that Duryodhana had. And then the Shantiparva, which is the longest parva in the whole Mahabharata, we're getting to the end. That's when Yudhisthira is crowned as the emperor, as the king, and Grandfather Bhishma gives these amazing instructions on Dharma. How to be a king, how to be Krishna conscious. This is the longest part of the Mahabharata. And within this are different literatures that you're probably familiar with. The Vishnu Sahasranam, heard of that before? There's the Shiva Sahasranam, and something called the Anugita. The Anugita is Krishna's instructions, I mean, it's the Gita that follows, that Krishna's instructions to Arjuna after the battle of Kurukshetra. It's a very beautiful part of the Mahabharata. And if any of you read the whole Mahabharata, read this section, it's very, very wonderful. So this is called the Shanti. Shanti, of course, means peaceful parv. And Anushasana parv is continuation, means continuation of the instructions from Grandfather Bhishma. They actually take two parvas. And the Ashvamedha parva is when the horse sacrifice is performed by Yudhisthira and Arjuna goes out and conquers the whole world. The Ashrama Vasika parva, that means to take shelter, to go out. That's the deaths of Dhritarashtra, Gandhari, Kunti, and Vidura, who all go to the forest. And Vidura passes away first. He puts stones in his mouth. Yudhisthira goes to speak to him. He puts stones in his mouth so he can't speak any nonsense or speak about politics or anything. And he runs away from Yudhisthira. He passes away. And then there's a forest fire. And in that forest fire, Dhritarashtra, Gandhari, and Kunti, they leave this world. And it's described that Dhritarashtra, because he committed so many offenses, did not go back to Godhead. He actually merged into the Brahma Jyoti. That's what Prabhupada said. Then there's the Moshala Parv, and that means that's when the Yadava dynasty self-destructs under Gandhari's curse. They fought each other, being drunk, and killed each other. And this was Krishna's plan too, because he wanted to relieve the earth of the burden of his whole family who came down to enact this particular pastime. And then there's the Mahaprasthanika Parv, where the Pandavas head to the north. This is next to the last one. Where the Pandavas head to the north, renounce everything, and one by one, they pass away, except for Yudhisthira, because they've committed some mistake. Like Bhimsen passes away due to the fact that he eats too much. And then Arjuna passes away because one day he bragged that he was going to defeat his enemies and won. And he didn't. He made a vow he was going to defeat his enemy, and he didn't do it that particular day. And then Draupadi passes away because she favored Arjuna, even though she was supposed to be equal to all of her husbands. So in this way, all the four Pandavas and Draupadi pass away, and Yudhisthira is alone, and he is accompanied by a dog. Yes. Boy, you gave away the story. The dog was actually, and he's tested. You know, because Indra comes down, Yudhisthira's by himself. Indra comes down and says, all right, ready to go back to heaven? And he says, yes, I'm ready to go, but you got to take my dog. And Indra says, no dogs. You got to stay. If you want your dog. And Yudhisthira says, it's a very important instruction. You cannot neglect anyone who's taken shelter of you. That's considered very sinful. So Yudhisthira knew Dharma very, very well. And so Yamaraj, who is the dog, appeared and said, I'm very pleased. Now you go back to heaven. So he goes to heaven, and he sees Duryodhana there eating grapes, or whatever they eat in heaven. And he says, how did that happen? And then he gets advised, well, in heaven, you know, there's no envy, you know. We all make friends, kumbaya. Like that. So this is too much. It's too much. But anyway, I want to see my brothers. They should be in a better place than this. I said, oh, you really want to see your brothers? So they take him down to a place that's really smelly and tar and everything. And hears the voices of his brothers. And says, is that you? And they said, yes, it's us. And then the person accompanying Yudhisthira says, all right, now it's time you go back to heaven. And Yudhisthira says, no. Without my brothers, heaven is hell. And with my brothers, hell is heaven. I mean, this also shows great strength of character. There's many moral lessons from the Mahabharata. You know, it's the strength of loyalty. I mean, how could you leave your brothers in such a situation? And then this is another test that Yudhisthira underwent. Then they're all back to home, back to Godhead. And so the Pandavas are actually the eternal associates of Krishna. And they're teaching us many moral, ethical lessons in the Mahabharata. And specifically in the Gita, we hear the supreme spiritual message of Krishna, which is ultimately surrender to him and don't worry about anything. And there is Krishna breaking his promise to protect his devotee, as Krishna says, Kuntiya pratijanaki namai bhakta pranashati. My devotee will never perish. So, on that happy note, any questions or comments? Yes. I forget it right now. There is a whole history who Karna was in his past life. I have it written in my notes, but I don't remember right now. No. What happened is that Indra begged his armor.
Yeah. He
took
the last
one,
but he ran away, and then he took birth the next life at Karna, and that's why he
was born at Karna. All right.
But I don't remember that.
I'll look that up. Starts with a D in his last life, and that's a bit much I remember.
He was.
Yeah, he was a Suriki, and there was some curse there or some thing that happened in the past. Yeah, he wasn't one of the demigods. But we have Duryodhana and Shakuni were Kali and Dwarpa. Yeah.
Why did
that was a test. That was just a Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira was continually tested in different ways. You know, remember the story in the Mahabharata where the Yaksha actually killed the other Pandavas and Yudhisthira had to have a conversation with the Yaksha, who was Yamaraja actually. So Yudhisthira was tested. It's not that the Pandavas actually go to hell. But also it's described in the Mahabharata. Another thing is that Kshatriyas first have to see hell before they go to heaven. That's also mentioned in the Mahabharata. Because being a Kshatriya, you do so many things, harm so many things, you actually practice shooting on animals. So it's not a good business to be in. To be a Kshatriya. Yeah.
That's two questions. So in the Bhishma Parva, you said there is Bhagavad Gita. So are all the Bhagavad Gita, I think 700 verses, are they part of that Bhishma Parva?
Yes, they're part of the Mahabharata.
Oh, okay. So all of them is present.
But, I mean, to get more technical about, there's many editions of the Mahabharata and the experts, the historians have come up with what they call the critical edition of the Mahabharata. Actually, there's like 84 different editions of the Mahabharata. The story is the same. Sometimes the details change. For example, in South India, you have... Turn it down. Oh, sorry. Yeah, in South India, you have a version of the Mahabharata where Parashara Muni and Satyavati actually get married. And in the North Indian version of the Mahabharata, you have Parashara Muni and Satyavati, you know, just having Srila Vyasadeva on an island in the river. So it's details. Some of the details are different, but the Bhagavad Gita is always there.
The second question was the Mahabharata, as you said, was spoken by Vyasadeva and written by Ganesh.
Ganesh, yeah.
So did the actual events happen after it was recorded, or was it? But the events, did the events happen before and corrected the record?
Some of the events, the exact time when it was spoken is not mentioned. For example, in the Vedic literatures, you have predictions of the future too. So Vyasadeva, being a literary incarnation of Krishna, as Krishna says in the Gita, I know everything past, present, and future, but me no one knows. So in other words, Vyasadeva could see perfectly into the future. Just in the same way as Valmiki Muni, he was able to write the Ramayana, and even the Uttara Ramayana, before the events actually happened. Because they have perfect vision, they can see the Lord's pastimes. So exactly when he wrote it down, and of course for a long time it was an oral tradition. That's why you see the linguistic experts give a different date to the Mahabharata than actually the real date. Because they're basing it on a later writing of it, because in the beginning, people could hear the Mahabharata once and remember every single word. Whereas we can't do that. I mean, we can't remember things from 1 minute to another, from one day to another, what to speak of a whole text. Like, can you imagine 100,000 shlokas and remembering it just upon hearing it once? I don't know anybody who can do that. Okay. Thank you. Okay, so now we have announcements. So we want to thank everybody. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.